Well, so far in this study, over the last several months, we've learned how to be wise with money. We've looked at how to earn it, how to save it, how to give it, how to invest it, how to spend it, how to lend it. And now for the next, two or three weeks, we want to talk about how to be stupid with money. And that is how to borrow it. I want to talk about debt. I've touched on this topic of debt several times throughout this series. Everything, of course, is interconnected, so it's pretty much impossible to preach for 5 months on money and not mention debt yet. So I do want to cover that in a lot more detail over the next couple of weeks, dedicate some sermons to it. I really want to drill it into your heads. That's what I want to do. I want to get it so deep in there that every time in the future that it ever crosses your mind, maybe to swipe that card if you're not going to pay it off tomorrow or sign your name on that loan for that car or whatever, I want you to have this little voice in the back of your head. I want you to hear Pastor Wagner saying, don't do it. This is dumb. Don't do it. Pay cash. Save up money for it first. I feel like when I fight against debt, and I've been doing this for, 12 years as a preacher anyway, and my entire life before that. But when I fight against this, I feel like I'm fighting against an entrenched enemy. Because this is so ingrained in American culture now. Didn't used to be, but it's so ingrained that I'm really fighting against the current. And I am endeavoring to wage relentless war against this until this enemy is vanquished in the lives of those that hear me. And I hope this multi-month offensive will send it packing. That's my hope. That's my goal. So let's talk about debt a little bit here. And I want to start by giving you a little bit of a history of debt in America. Debt has been the American way of life for our lifetimes, pretty much, especially those that are young. It probably started in the 1950s when it got started. And then it got a lot worse in the 1970s and 80s when credit cards became ubiquitous. And today, nobody gives it a second thought at all. I mean, it is completely normal in most people's minds to have credit cards and to run balances on credit cards, to have car loans, 30-year mortgages, HELOCs, home equity loans, student loans. All this stuff is just normal to the average person. Nobody gives it a second thought. But it didn't used to be normal. None of that stuff was normal. Not in generations past in America. And I have a little quote here, or a lengthy quote, from Dave Ramsey's book, Dave Ramsey's Complete Guide to Money, and he gives a nice little overview of the history of debt in America. So I thought this would be worth reading. He writes, "We usually forget, though, that debt has not always been a way of life. In the scope of American history, debt is still relatively new. Our great-grandparents pretty much believed debt was a sin. They thought it was morally wrong." And I've realized that I was just born too late, because I think like that generation thought. Now, Ramsey's about 22 years older than I am, so technically he would be the next generation. But my dad was old when he had me, and my grandfather was old when he had him. So basically Ramsey's great-grandparents are probably the same age as my great-grandparents, his grandparents, my grandparents. So he's basically talking about, my family's generation here. As a matter of fact, I have an old Sears catalog from 1910 that says, plain as day, quote, buying on credit is folly. Can you imagine reading that on Sears' website today? Yeah, right. They'd say, hey, buy now, pay later, do what all the smart people do, or whatever. Now, these are Ramsey's words again. Can you imagine Sears telling you that today? Actually, I can't really imagine Sears telling me anything today, because I think they're about out of business, But he wrote this a little more than 15 years ago when Sears was still a thing. Sears wasn't alone in the anti-debt stance either. Have you ever wondered what JC stands for in JCPenney? It's named for the founder, James Cash Penney. He never allowed credit to be offered in any of his stores while he was alive. It was only after his death that credit cards and store credit slipped into JCPenney's business. And now old James Cash is spinning in his grave. Now, I thought that, and Ramsey kind of alludes to the fact that Cash was his nickname, but I looked it up last night, and Cash was actually his real middle name. It wasn't his nickname. Judy, you should have bet me on that yesterday. You'd have won back your 50 cents. I do have a bit of a confession to make. Sadly, over the years, I have been swindling old ladies in this church out of their money. I bet Bev a penny back in 2020 that Trump was going to lose the election, and I collected on it. And then I bet Judy 50 cents last night that Abraham Lincoln was born in Kentucky, and I collected on it. I did tithe it, though. I gave a nickel to the Lord. Seriously, I actually did. But anyway, I just wanted to kind of make that confession here that I have been swindling old ladies out of their money. So, Wayne, you better keep an eye on her because she's going to be, you know, going to the Kentucky Derby here soon or something.
But, I didn't
know she paid that up. Yeah. That's right. All right. Anyway, he continues here in the quote. Henry Ford hated debt so much that he didn't allow the use of credit at Ford Motor Company until 10 years after the other car makers were making car loans. With Henry long gone, Ford Motor Credit is now a huge part of the family business. Like I said, the difference between then and now, can you imagine a car company that would not sell cars on credit and debt today? They wouldn't sell hardly a single car. Because that's what almost everybody does that. Nobody should, nobody has to, but they almost all do. Getting back to the quote here. So our great-grandparents thought debt was a sin. Our grandparents weren't quite as strict, but they still thought it was really stupid and only borrowed on a few things. In 1950, Frank McNamara changed the whole financial landscape of the country with a little piece of plastic called diner's card. He had made deals with several restaurants in New York City, all who agreed to accept this single form of payment across all the different businesses as a, quote, convenience, unquote, to the customers. Right then and there, the credit card was born. A few years later, in 1958, a little bank on the West Coast called Bank of America sent a mailing out to about 60,000 of their customers that contained a similar piece of plastic called the Bank AmeriCard. That same year, a new company emerged to, quote, help, unquote, consumers make easy payments, and American Express was born. Now, of course, American Excess is a way of life, but then our grandparents were a lot less trusting. Our parents were more accepting, and they started borrowing on even more things. Credit cards started popping up more often, and in 1976, Bank AmeriCard changed its name to Visa. Heard of them? 10 years later, in 1986, Sears got into a big dispute with Visa, which resulted in Sears branching out and taking Visa on head-to-head with their new card, which they called Discover. Ever wonder where Discover Card came from? There you go. Sears got into a fight with Visa and decided to make their own. Discover quickly became the most profitable division of Sears. There's a reason why they're trying to give you credit cards. You know that? It's not for your convenience. It's not because they like you. It's not because they want to help you out. It's because they make a fortune off of you paying crazy amounts of interest on these things. A lot of these car companies, they make as much money on the financing or more money on the financing than they make on the cars themselves. That should tell you something. So a while later, when Sears was in serious financial trouble, selling off the Discover brand was one of the things that saved them from bankruptcy. I usually don't dive into the history of debt in this kind of detail, but I personally find it fascinating. Credit practically didn't exist as we know it just 50 years ago. This is like 65 years ago now or so. But today, we can't imagine living without car loans and credit cards. The thought of actually paying with cash at a department store has become somewhat of a novelty. There are some places now when you offer to pay them cash and they just kind of look at you like, what am I supposed to do with this? You know, go to a doctor's office and dentist's office and try to pay cash. You're like, let me check here in the drawer. I don't know. We have any change? Nobody does that hardly anymore these days. Can you imagine that in 1970, only about 15% of Americans had a credit card? Today, 77% of all adults have at least one. This is 15, 17 years ago, so it's probably a lot higher than that today. Today, 77% of all adults have at least one card, and the average cardholder has more than seven cards. Seven cards. Why does he have seven? Any idea why he has seven? Because six of them are full, because he's an idiot. That's why. That's why he's got seven. Why else would you? It feels like the Visa brand has been around since the dawn of time, but Visa as a household name is just a little over 30, or today 45 or so, years old. Again, that's some incredible marketing power. It is, because anybody that's my age or below, like my parents didn't use credit cards really, but they had them, I don't know, for emergencies or something. But I grew up seeing credit cards, you know, so, you know, for me, the idea that, you know, at one time there was no such thing as a credit card, I kind of have to, you know, think about that and get my mind wrapped around it. It'd be like kids today if you tell them that a phone used to hang on the wall or something, and they'd be like, really, huh? That's crazy. It had a cord on it? Never heard of that. You dialed it? You, like, spun the thing? Huh. That's why they call it dialing, you know? You're hang up the phone, you dial it, right? Kids don't even know where those terms come from these days. Anyway, so I probably seem weird to most people because I refuse to go into debt for anything, and I mean anything. But 115 years ago, I would have seemed perfectly normal to most people. They would have looked at me and just, I mean, they wouldn't even looked at me. They'd be like, hey, there's just another guy that does what everybody else does, right? He doesn't take on debt for anything. But not today. Today, people think you're weird. Like I said, I was born too late. If you follow the biblical teaching of staying out of debt and you actually pay for things, you pay for what you have, people will think you're strange and they will probably even speak evil of you and make fun of you in some cases. But you shouldn't be surprised about this. If you turn to 1 Peter 4, 3 through 4, I want to read you a verse. This isn't particularly or specifically about debt. In fact, I don't really even think debt is in this passage specifically, but not the idea of it. I can't think of the word I'm thinking of. Anyway, the concept. There we go. I knew it was a C word. The concept of it's there. And there is an interesting word in this passage, and it crops up twice, and it just really hit me when I was reading it, and I'll emphasize it, and you'll see it. 1 Peter 4, 3 through 4. For the time past of our life may suffice us to have wrought the will of the Gentiles. So he's saying, before you were converted, you lived like a heathen. Okay? That's what he's saying there, right? That's what we were like. We were heathen before we were converted. When we walked in lasciviousness, that's sexual lusts, that would cover all kinds of lusts, including, you know what lust is? It's called covetousness in another place in the Bible. And you know what debt is all about? Covetousness. I want what other people have. I want, you know, he's got a nice house. I want a nice house. He's got a new car. I want a new car. He's got all these things. He's got the perfect life. He goes on the nice vacations. I want all that, right? Covetousness. So you go out and buy it when you can't afford it. Lust. Excess of wine. Excess. You know what excess is? It's going too far, right? It's doing more than you should. What do you think debt is? Debt is excess. You are spending money that you don't have in excess of your budget to get things that you don't need. Excess of wine, revelings, banquetings. Where do people blow a lot of their money? Partying and eating out. Reveling and banqueting, right? See, I can fit it in here. I'm not saying that's exactly what it's talking about, but I can make it fit. And abominable idolatries. You ever heard of Christmas time? People blow hundreds and hundreds of dollars at Christmas time on their credit cards that they can't afford. I read you the quotes here earlier in this study. Remember how many people put hundreds of dollars on credit cards at Christmas time every year? And abominable idolatries, wherein they think it strange that ye run not with them to the same excess, there is the word again, to the same excess of riot, speaking evil of you. So just try it someday. Try stop running with the Joneses. Stop doing what everybody else does. Stop buying the new cars on credit. Stop buying the house you can't afford. Stop doing all the things that people do. Stop going to the to the department store and swiping the card to buy the nice, fancy, flashy clothing to look like everybody else looks. Stop doing that for a while and start living frugally and paying cash for things, and they will think it's strange. They'll speak evil of you. They'll make fun of you, especially if you're younger. The younger you are, the more they'll make fun of you. If you're older, older people should have some sense by that time, and they're probably not going to make fun of you. But when you're younger, try that in your 20s and see what happens. Try living frugally and responsibly and actually paying for things and not running up debt in your 20s and 30s and see what your friends say about you. They will make fun of you for your lack of excess. But you know what? Those people who think you're strange, they're all broke. They're all broke. And why should you care what broke people think about you? Why would you care what broke people think of you? Because nobody who's wise with money will think that you're strange for refusing to take on any kind of debt. Nobody that has any sense, nobody that has any maturity, nobody that has any wisdom is going to look at somebody that won't take on debt and think, boy, that guy's stupid. No, people like that are going to think, now this guy has some wisdom. This guy has got some sense. I want to hire him, you know, because he's got some sense. Only broke people are going to look at somebody like that that's living wise and frugally and without debt and think, that guy's dumb. Why doesn't he just let somebody else pay for it, you know? I mean, why don't you just take on that mortgage and then invest the extra money or something? You'll make more money in investments than you do on the mortgage interest rate or something. That's what dumb people do. That's what dumb people think. Dumb people think it's a great idea to go into debt. You can make money on debt. No, you can go broke on debt is what you can do. It's a stupid thing to do. Albert Einstein said, great spirits have always found violent opposition from mediocre minds. I thought that was pretty good. Great spirits have always found violent opposition from mediocre minds. Today we call them half-wits. I don't know if you've ever heard of that term or not. Half-wits. Midwits. No, not half-wits. Midwits. People that are above average, but like of mediocre intelligence. They're smart enough that they think they're a lot smarter than they are. They're smarter than the average person, but they're not really all that bright. But they speak in platitudes and tell you about how you can make money going into debt and all this kind of stupid stuff. Now, Americans are in debt up to their eyeballs. I gave you many, many quotes and gave you all kinds of statistics earlier on in this study. So you can go back in the outline if you're interested in that. That was back on pages 19 through 22. But I'm just going to give you just a couple of things here just to refresh your memories. I didn't give you this one before. This is from an article in Zero Hedge. It was called Merry Christmas. Here's the average credit card debt in every U.S. state. This was on December 25th, 2024. So this is new information. In there, I'm not quoting them. I'm just summarizing what the article showed. And it showed, on average, American households have $6,140 of credit card debt. That's the average, which means that a lot of them have a lot more than that, right? Some have less. But over $6,000 of credit card debt. That's at 20-some percent interest. And chances are, if you have $6,000 of credit card debt, you're not paying $500 a month to pay them off. You're paying $20 or $30 or $50 or whatever minimum payments are. You're making minimum payments on them. And you know how long that'll take the average person to pay off a $6,000 bill on their credit card making minimum payments? I quote from the article now. Bank rates analysis points out that when making only minimum payments, it would take more than 17 years to pay off the national average debt of $6,140. 17 years. That means that that pair of jeans that you went to Penny's, is there Penny's? I think it's still around a little bit. Wherever, someplace, some other clothes buying store shows you how many of them I go to. I can't even think of one. You go there and you pay $50 for a pair of pants. Maybe that's very cheap these days. I don't know. And you swiped it on your credit card and made payments on it for the next 17 years. Do you know how much money you just paid for those pants? Probably like $300 or $400 or something. You may as well have gone to like Gucci or something. I don't know if Gucci even makes pants, but anyway, you get the point, right? Some designer place. It's crazy. 17 years to pay that off. That's assuming, of course, the fool's not going to continue swiping the card the whole time, right? So, I mean, yeah, he could pay that $6,000 off in the next 17 years, but he's just going to keep racking it up as he's going. So guess what? He's never going to pay the credit card off. He's going to have it for the rest of his life. That's how insane our country is these days. I don't know if you remember this old commercial or not. This is at least 20 years ago. I haven't had TV for 20 years, but I remember seeing when I had TV, 20-some years ago, I remember seeing this commercial, and it just stuck with me. I remembered it. I couldn't remember it all verbatim, but I could remember a bunch of it. And I just punched it into YouTube, and I found it. And it goes like this. He says, "I'm Stanley Johnson. I've got a great family. I've got a 4-bedroom house and a great community. Like my car? It's new. I even belong to the local golf club. How do I do it? I'm in debt up to my eyeballs. I can barely pay my finance charges. Somebody help me." Now, of course, it was for some financing company, so they're gonna loan him some more money to try to help him to get out of debt, right? That's what these finance companies do. "Hey, you're in debt. We'll help you out. We'll get you further in debt to get you out of debt. We'll help you." But yeah, I still remember that, seeing that. How do I do it? I'm in debt up to my eyeballs. That commercial describes the average American family. The details might be slightly different. They might only have a 3-bedroom house instead of a 4, right? They may not be a member of the golf club, but they're a member of some other expensive thing that they do. Now, debt is not only stupid in that it just makes you broke and you're never going to get ahead, but it also destroys the lives and marriages of young people. Here's a quote from Ramsey's book again, Dave Ramsey's Complete Guide to Money. He says, financial expert and author Larry Burkett, I don't know if it's Burkett or Burkett, but Larry Burkett used to say that modern couples spend the first 5 to 7 years of their marriage trying to attain the same standard of living as their parents, only it took their parents 35 years to get there. And that's the problem today. The problem today is that kids want to get out of college and they want to live at the same, or even while they're in college, they want to live at the same standard as their parents lived, except their parents took, like they said, 35 years to get there. And he continues, Ramsey describes this, and this is absolutely true. I've watched it. I've seen this. When I was this age, I watched my stupid friends do this exact same dumb stuff. That's how most couples start out these days. Out of school with some student loans, 1 or 2 car loans, a new house on crazy payments and no equity, a house full of furniture on 90 days, same as cash, and a pretty lousy income. In fact, the average household income for a 25-year-old couple is only $27,047. This is 16, 17 years ago, so it's a little higher today, obviously. But still, you know, not exactly an income that you can afford a brand new house and brand new cars and, you know, brand new furniture for the house and all this other stuff. Back in the day, back when you folks were young, I wasn't there, but I've been told, when you went off and when you got out on your own and you got your own apartment or your own house, your parents typically would give you their old refrigerator that was 15 years old and they might buy a new one, you know, or they'd give you their old washing machine or something. That's how it used to work. Not today. These kids would be insulted. "You mean to tell me I'd have to have a used refrigerator? Some old piece of junk? I want a new one." With that kind of intense financial stress on a young marriage, is it any wonder why the divorce rate is so devastating for couples in their first few years of marriage? They're starting their lives together with a boat anchor around their necks. They don't stand a chance. It's true. Money problems are the number one problem in marriage, especially for young couples. And you take a young couple, everybody that's been married knows how hard the first year or two is, right? That's the hardest time. And take a young couple and then strap them with debt to where they got this big burden on their shoulders and then they're all stressed out. It's no wonder that a lot of these marriages fail. All right, so I want to give you 14 reasons to avoid debt like the plague. 14 reasons to avoid debt like the plague. And actually, that's not exactly true. You should avoid it worse than the plague, more so than the plague. Because the thing is, when you take on debt, you will get harmed, you will get sick every single time. Any kind of debt you take on, you are going to get harmed, whether it's financial harm or some other stress, there's going to be some harm. You're going to get harmed every single time you take on debt. But if you have a strong immune system and you go hang around somebody with the plague, you might not get sick, right? So you should avoid debt more than the plague because the plague is less dangerous because, you know, your immune system might take care of it. But you're always going to get hurt with debt. All right, first reason to avoid debt like the plague. You pay more for everything because of interest. You pay more for everything. So assuming that over the course of your life, you buy the same amount of things that you would, only person A buys them all right up front and makes payments on them for years and years and years and pays all this interest, and person B saves up the money first and buys the stuff, they both end up with the same amount of stuff. But guess what? Person B has the stuff and a huge bank account in several years, and person A just has the stuff, and the stuff's already depreciated, and he's got no money. You pay way more money for stuff. I just checked this. I was sure of it, but I checked it. I went to the mortgage calculator last night and punched in the numbers. You know, if you buy a house on a 30-year mortgage today at today's interest rates, you know, 6.7%, you will pay over twice as much for that house. You'll pay twice as much. If you bought a $300,000 house today on a 30-year mortgage, if memory serves me correctly, you will pay $381,000 in interest. In interest. You will pay more than the price of the house to the bankers in interest. Think about that. Think about that. That's why 30-year mortgages are a bad deal. If you're going to do it, you do a 15-year. If you got to do a mortgage, do a 15-year. You'll spend a lot less in interest. And I'm going to talk about that next Sunday. And I got some charts and tables and break it down for you and show you the numbers there of why that makes so much more sense. Albert Einstein again said the following. I just read this in a new book that I got the other day, and it wasn't really even about this topic. But it really jumped out at me. You may have heard part of this quote, but you probably didn't hear the whole quote. The second part of the quote's way better than the first, but everybody leaves off that part. Einstein said, "Compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world. He who understands it earns it. He who doesn't pays it." He who understands compound interest earns it. He who doesn't understand it pays it. And it works, it's very powerful. It works both ways. It'll make you wealthier or it'll make you poorer. If you save money at compound interest, it will do all the work for you. You just sit back and let it do its work. But if you take out loans, it'll do the same thing. It'll do the work of draining you of your money and you won't get anywhere. All right, number two reason to avoid debt like the plague is that you acquire things you don't need. You acquire things you don't need. You acquire some things you don't need because you just go out there and take a loan out for those things and you'd get them. For instance, the car that you don't need, the new car, the more expensive car, whatever. The car you don't need, if you were paying cash for it, you wouldn't acquire it. You wouldn't get it, right? Because you didn't have the cash for it, so you'd have to wait, right? So you'd get more of a car than you need. You get more of a house than you need. You get, you know, bigger stuff that you don't need. But also, you get a bunch of other junk you don't need either, because if you had to save money for that car, you wouldn't be buying all this crap on Amazon every week and every month because you're saving money for the car, you're saving money for the house. So you buy this other junk you don't need, and then you end up with this junk and the more expensive car that you didn't need in the first place, right? So you end up with all this stuff you don't need. And you'll find that if you save money for things and you don't take them on payments, you don't take out loans for them, you will mature in the time that it takes you to save for those things, and you won't buy the thing in the first place. I've told you the story. Years ago, when I was living in Ohio, I decided I wanted to have a sports car. I wasn't going to go buy a new one. I wasn't going to go buy anything crazy, but I wanted to spend like $20,000 on a sports car or something. So I started saving money. Sinking fund, right? Putting money every month. I'm going to buy this sports car. Well, guess what happened when I had the money to buy the sports car? I'm not blowing 20 grand on that dumb car. That's stupid. Why would I do that? Right? Now, what would I have done if I had taken out a loan on it? Well, I'd have paid 30 grand for it, for one thing, because I'd have paid all this interest on a depreciating asset. It would have been really neat and cool and fun for, you know, the first month or so. And then after that, it would have just been a car, and it would have been a pain in the butt, and it would have been expensive to maintain, and it would have been a big waste of money. So yeah, if you take on debt for things, you acquire things you don't need. Number three reason to avoid debt like the plague: you do not learn contentment. Let's look at Hebrews 13 and verse 5. I do have some more scripture here coming up. Hebrews 13 and verse 5. Contentment is an essential characteristic for a mature Christian. And if you just take out loans for things and you swipe the card for things, you don't learn contentment. Hebrews 13 and verse 5. Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have, for he hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. You see how covetousness and contentment are antonyms, right? If you are content, you won't be covetous. If you're covetous, you're not going to be content. You see everybody else having the new cars or the nicer houses or the nicer clothes or the new furniture or nice addition or redoing the bathroom in the house, redoing the kitchen. There's nothing wrong with any of that stuff when you've got the money to pay for it. When you can pay for it, that's fine and dandy. Have at it. But you see all that stuff and then you're like, I want that. But I don't have the money for it. So I'll just take out a loan. I'll just swipe the card, right? It's a lack of contentment. When you force yourself to pay cash and save up for things, you will learn contentment. Paul says that I have learned to be, how did he put it in Philippians chapter 4? It's not coming to me right now. Philippians chapter 4. He said, not that I speak in respect of want, verse 11. For I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. See, you don't come out of the womb with contentment. How many babies you ever see come out of the womb content? They start crying as soon as they come out of the room. They start screaming for something. They want something right away, right? I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. I both know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. So yes, you learn contentment when you don't take out loans for things. Reason number four to avoid debt like the plague is that you are a bad example to others. You're a bad example to others. You're a bad example to your children, to your siblings, to your grandchildren. If you're a teacher, you're a bad example to your students. If you're a pastor, you're a bad example to your church members. Or if you're another church member, you're a bad example to church members. You're a bad example to your neighbors, your friends, your coworkers. You name it. You're one that swipes your credit card. You sign your name on the dotted line every time you want something. You're a bad example. You're not teaching your children to live by a good example. If I, as your pastor, did that, I'd be a bad example. And as a pastor, I have no choice. Be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in your manner of life. What kind of a pastor would I be if you found out that I'm out there taking on car loans, and I'm swiping my credit card, and I got a big credit card balance, and I got a house full of furniture that I'm making payments on to the furniture store, and whatever else? What kind of a pastor would I be? When the Bible says, owe no man anything, and I owe a bunch of men a lot of stuff, what kind of a pastor would I be? I'd be a bad example. That's what I'd be. Fifth reason to avoid debt like the plague is you enslave yourself. Proverbs 22 and verse 7. People think that slavery was abolished in the 1800s. No, it was just getting started a little later than that. Yes, the small portion of the population that was physically enslaved were freed in the 1800s, and then the entire population got enslaved after that in the 20th century. Proverbs 22 and verse 7. I'll show you what I'm talking about here. Proverbs 22 and verse 7. The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. Servant. Now, in the King James, in most places where it uses the word servant, it's referring to a bondservant, like a slave, somebody that was not a free man. There are some places where it talks about a hired servant. That would be like an employee or somebody today. But in most cases, when it talks about servants, it's talking about people who were slaves. So when you take out a loan, when you borrow money from a bank or from any other person, you have become a slave to that person. You are no longer free. You cannot do what you want. You can't go where you want to. You're not free. You have to make that payment. And if you don't, they are going to come after you. They're going to hound you. They're going to send in the debt collectors. They're going to sue you. They could even try to, and back in the day, put you in prison. There was debtor's prison back in the day. They don't have that anymore. But you're not free when you take out a loan. You are a slave. So the next time you sign your name on a loan application or swipe your credit card when you know you won't pay it off tomorrow. See, I'm fine. I've said this before. This is where I deviate from Ramsey. One place I deviate from Ramsey, I am personally okay using a credit card if you pay it off tomorrow. If you pay it off tomorrow. I am personally not okay with it. If you say I pay it off at the end of the month, I'd say don't use it. If you're one that's going to pay it off at the end of the month, that's a really dumb idea. Because the end of the month, you're going to look and like, whoa, I got hundreds of dollars on here. I don't even know where I spent my money. I don't know what happened. You're not going to be managing your money well, number one. And number two, chances are if you pay it off at the end of the month, the end of the month is going to come and you're like, oh, I don't have enough money to pay it off at the end of the month. Pay it off every day. If you're not going to do that, use a debit card. That's my advice. Ramsey recommends only using debit cards, but you know, I'm fine with using the credit card. I like it better for various reasons. But if you've ever had credit card debt, though, just as a side note, if you've ever had credit card debt, if you ever had a problem, you were an addict, you were a debt addict, don't use a credit card again. I'd give the same advice if somebody was an alcoholic. You were an alcoholic, you got free from alcohol. Do not think, well, I can just take a drink once in a while because, you know, I've broken the addiction. You're going to go right back to it. You were addicted to cigarettes. You don't go back and have a smoke once in a while. 100% abstinence. I think the same thing. If you had credit card problems in the past, don't use a credit card. Get rid of it. You're playing with fire. But if you never have, you've always used a credit card and you pay it off the next day, you know, I don't personally have a problem with that. Just like I don't have a problem with somebody that never had an alcohol addiction, was never an alcoholic, having a drink once in a while. I don't have a problem with that at all. All right, anyway, where was I? So the next time you sign your name on a loan application or swipe your credit card when you know you won't pay it off tomorrow, just imagine a pair of handcuffs being placed onto your hands and a chain attached to them with a big, heavy steel ball attached to it that you're going to carry around until the debt is paid. I want you to remember that. I want you to get that image in your mind. The next time you go to sign your name on that car loan or whatever loan it is, the next time you do that, I want you to remember handcuffs. They are handcuffing me, and there's a big ball and chain attached to me. Next time you swipe that card and you know you're not paying it off tomorrow, I want you to remember that. Handcuffs with a big, heavy ball and chain. And Braden, I want you to remember this. When anyone encourages you to borrow money or to take out a loan for anything, with the possible exception of your first house, okay? You can take out a loan for your first house if you have to. I like Ramsey's idea. I like the 100% down payment version of it. That's my favorite way. But that might not be always, possible. That was a big word. Sometimes those big words are hard for me to think of. It might not be possible for everybody. So it's okay. If you need to, you save up money, you take a 15-year mortgage on your house. And you pay that thing off and you never take out another one. But other than that, if anybody ever tries to tell you to borrow money for anything except for that house, or when someone tells you to get a credit card, I want you to remember the handcuffs and the ball and chain. You're going into bondage. You got that handcuffs and you got that big heavy ball and you're carrying that thing around for your whole life. You take out that 30-year mortgage. You got that big old ball on your back for 30 years, for half your life. Don't do that. You sign on the line for that car. You're carrying around that big ball for 5, 6, 7 years with that heavy burden. And then you look at the value of that car, and every day the value of that car goes down, down, down. But that burden is, I mean, you're still carrying that weight. That weight is the same every single day for the next 5 or 6 or 7 years while the value of that car goes down. You remember that the next time somebody tries to talk you into that. And if you go to a car dealership, I told you this before. You go to a car dealership and some guy tries to tell you, oh, you can just take out a loan. You don't have to pay now. You can pay later. You know what you tell him? You tell him, sir, with all due respect, I'm not going to be a debt slave. I'm going to pay for this car with money. And my pastor told me to tell you to go pound sand. That's what you tell him. You tell him that. He's got a problem with that. Give him my phone number. Tell him to call me up. I will figuratively take him behind the woodshed. Trust me. I'm not taking anybody physically behind the woodshed. I mean, you've seen me. But figuratively, I'm taking him behind the woodshed. That's child exploitation. I don't take kindly to that. Here's Ramsey. And Dave Ramsey's Complete Guide to Money. Proverbs 22 and verse 7 says it clearly. The borrower is slave to the lender, and he's not using the KJV. Slave. Like I said, though, the KJV, it is referring to a slave. Slave. A slave can't go where he wants to do, or a slave can't go where he wants or do what he wants because he's always working for somebody else. He can't make his own decisions, and he isn't free to become the person he wants to be. That's exactly what debt does to you. When you go into debt, you aren't using someone else's tools. You're submitting yourself to a new master. It doesn't get any clearer than that. Sixth reason that you want to avoid debt like the plague is because you will never acquire much wealth. You're never going to acquire much wealth. Here's Thomas J. Stanley from The Millionaire Next Door that I've quoted from many times in this study. Here's what he found by studying hundreds or thousands of millionaires. Why are so few people in America affluent? Even most households with six-figure annual incomes are not affluent. And that's true. There's a lot of people, not the average, but there's plenty of people out there that make six figures, over $100,000 a year. Some of them, both couples do. I mean, they make a couple hundred thousand a year. And you know what? They're just as broke as their neighbor that makes 50 grand a year. Why? Because most people spend every dime they make and more. These people have a different orientation than does Johnny Lucas. Johnny Lucas is one of the millionaires that he was talking about in this book. One of the normal everyday millionaires that you wouldn't know was a millionaire. They believe in spending tomorrow's cash today. That is, the broke people making six figures. They are debt prone and are on earn and consume treadmills. To many of them, those who do not display abundant material possessions are not successful. To them, non-display-oriented people like Johnny Lucas are their inferiors. And that's true. The average broke guy that's living in the nice house, driving the brand new cars, making six figures, debt up to his eyeballs, he would look at the Johnny Lucas guy next door that's just kind of living in a normal house, driving a normal car. And Johnny Lucas is actually a millionaire. And the broke guy looks down at him and thinks that Johnny Lucas is his inferior. It's the other way around. It's the other way around. It's just today, because of debt, we have the illusion of wealth. It's just an illusion. You may look like you have wealth if you have debt, but it's only the illusion of wealth. Here's a fun experiment to do for you sometime. I've done this many times. I just think it's fun to do. Next time you go out driving, I know I've told you this before. Next time you go out driving, look at everything you see. Look at all the houses, all the buildings, all the cars, everything you see. All the people dressed in their nice clothing and whatever else. Look at all that stuff. And then imagine, what if everything that I see that is not paid for disappeared? Everything that is not paid for, what if it all disappeared? Let me tell you what, no traffic jams anymore. There's no cars on the road. Very few cars on the road. And land's going to be cheap because there's no houses anywhere. It's just a bunch of empty land all over the place because nobody owns any of it. Just about, anyway. Most people are going to be walking around naked because their clothes, remember, are on the credit card. They're going to pay them off in 17 years from now, but they're on the credit card right now. So people are walking around naked. They have no furniture in their house. Well, they don't even have a house. But if they did have a house, they'd have no furniture in it. And they don't have a car. They probably don't even have gas in the car because that's also on the 17-year pay plan, right? Think about that. It's an interesting thing to do. All right, number 7 reason to avoid debt like the plague is that you restrict your freedom, which is kind of like being a slave. I sort of already talked about that. But when you think about it, if you're in debt, and especially with certain types of debt, you really are a slave to the point where you can't go where you want to go. How many people back in like the 2008 after the housing bubble crash were upside down in their house? They were underwater in their house. They owed more on their house than it was worth. Guess what? You can't move. If you wanted or needed to move, you can't move in that circumstance because you can't sell your house. You sell your house for $200,000 and you owe $300,000 on it. Where are you going to get the other $100,000? Of course, you don't have any money. You can't move. You can't sell the house. If you do move, you have got to walk away from it, mail in the keys, and let it be foreclosed on and destroy your credit. You are not free. You can't change careers, right? If you're in debt up to your eyeballs and you just hate the job that you have and I'd really like to get into another career, but that would require me to stop, to quit my job for a little bit of time and go get some training or education or something like that. Or even if I didn't have to quit my job, I'd have to get some training or education, which means that I'd have to pay for it on the side, but I got no money, right? You can't change careers. You're kind of like a slave, aren't you? You can't take a vacation, right? Slaves don't take vacations. Well, neither do people that are in debt up to their eyeballs, unless they're putting it on the credit card and eventually they're going to pay the piper. You can't stay at home with the kids if you want to because you got that debt hanging over your head. You can't take time off for an emergency. Right? There are people that are literally like a slave to the company they work for. And it's not so much the company. They're a slave to their debt. They couldn't take a day off without pay if they had to. You have no freedom. Number 8th reason to avoid debt like the plague is that you bring extra stress into your life. You see, debt is risky and dangerous. It's risky and dangerous. And the more you have of it, the more at risk you are. The more danger you're in, the more stress that brings into your life. H. Jackson Brown Jr. in his book, The Lace Little Instruction Book, said, remember the old proverb, out of debt, out of danger. 9th reason to avoid debt like the plague is you will end up doing things you wouldn't normally do due to desperation. Let's look at 1 Samuel 22 and verse 2. You'll end up doing things that you would have never imagined that you would do, but you're desperate. Actually, I have another. Before you go ahead and turn to 1 Samuel 22, I just thought another one right now that I had never thought about before. Actually, I thought of a couple of them. Proverbs 6:30, men do not despise a thief if he steal to satisfy his soul when he is hungry, but if he be found, he shall restore sevenfold, yea, or he shall give all the substance of his house. The man ends up stealing because he's hungry. That could very well happen when you're in debt. You're in debt and you're to the point where you're at the end of your rope, you can't borrow any more money, you lose your job, and guess what? You'd result to something ignominious like theft. Remember what Solomon said. I just give you one more. I just thought of this one too. Proverbs chapter 30. And verse 7, you don't need to turn there. You've heard it lots of times. Two things have I required of thee. Deny me them not before I die. This is verse 7. Remove far from me vanity and lies. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food convenient for me, lest I be full and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and take the name of my God in vain. Yes, best to be in that middle station of life. But the point is, when you're poor, you might be surprised what you would resort to. You don't want to go there. 1 Samuel 22 and verse 2. 1 Samuel 22 and verse 2. This is when David was running from King Saul. Saul was trying to kill him. And it says, and everyone that was in distress, and everyone that was in debt, and everyone that was discontented gathered themselves unto him, and he became a captain over them, and there were with him about 400 men. Now, do you think men that weren't in distress, weren't in debt, and weren't discontented were going to sign up to run around in the wilderness with David when the king of the land and his huge army is after him trying to kill him? Do you think that you would sign up for that deal? No. Who's signing up for it? Them that are in distress, in debt, and discontented. See, when you're in debt, you'll end up doing things that you wouldn't normally have done. That's funny. The more things change, the more they stay the same. This is not universal, of course. But you know, this describes a lot of soldiers in the military. Distress, debt, and discontented. They join the military because, you know, they're in desperate straits. Remember the old cadence, got a letter in the jail, join the army or go to jail? Or got a letter in the mail, join the army or go to jail? That's why a lot of them end up in there. Number 10, reason to avoid debt like the plague. You put your assets at risk as collateral. Proverbs 22, 26 through 27. This is where it really gets dangerous. Debt's like any other addiction. It's like any other foolish thing. It usually starts off small. It's not such a big deal. I'm just having one drink a night, and then it's two, and then it's three, and then it's four, and then, you know, and so on, right? I'm only doing a little bit of gambling. I only go down to the casino, you know, only once a month, and then it's once a week, and then it's once, you know, a couple times a week, and before you know it, it's every night, and your money's all gambled away, right? That's the way things like that happen, typically. Well, debt's the same way. It's just a little bit here. It's a little car loan here. It's a little credit card there. It's a little personal loan here. It's a little furniture loan there. It's a little student loan here. Before you know it, it's stacking up, and it's getting heavier and heavier and heavier, and I'm having less and less margin, and all of a sudden, I'm in trouble. And now, I need to put up my house as collateral. Now I need to take out a home equity line of credit and put up my house as the collateral so that I can pay off these credit cards or so that I can do this thing, whatever this emergency came up with. And now, you're at risk of losing your house. Proverbs 22 verses 26 through 27. Be not one of them that strike hands, or of them that are sureties for debts. If thou hast nothing to pay, why should he take away thy bed from under thee? You know, you're a surety for a debt. You got a friend that goes into debt, and you shake your hand, you sign on the line, you become a co-signer for him, and take the risk of his debt on yourself. And guess what? When he's got nothing to pay, or you've got nothing to pay, then what? They take away your bed from you, or take away your house from you. That's what happens when you get deep into debt. The Bible calls collateral a pledge. Let me just give you a few verses here. Exodus 22, 25 through 26. That's why you don't ever want to take out a home equity loan. Ever. Because you put your house at risk. You put the place where you're living at risk. Exodus 22 and verse 25. If thou lend money to any of my people that is poor by thee, thou shalt not be to him as an usurer. We already talked about that here a week or two ago. Neither shalt thou lay upon him usury. If thou at all take thy neighbor's raiment to pledge, thou shalt deliver it unto him by that the sun goeth down. For that is his covering only, it is his raiment for his skin, wherein shall he sleep, and it shall come to pass, when he crieth unto me, that I will hear, for I am gracious. But that's called a pledge. Collateral is called a pledge. He would owe you money, he would give you his garment for a pledge, for collateral. You would ensure that he pays, and you don't give the garment back. Well, in this case, you'd give it back every night because he had to sleep in it, and then you'd get it back the next day. This is not a good position to be in. Deuteronomy 24, verses 10 through 13. Deuteronomy 24, 10 through 13. When thou dost lend thy brother anything, thou shalt not go into his house to fetch his pledge. Thou shalt stand abroad, and the man to whom thou dost lend shall bring out the pledge abroad unto thee. And if a man be poor, thou shalt not sleep with his pledge. Verse 13, in any case thou shalt deliver him the pledge again when the sun goeth down, that he may sleep in his own raiment, and bless thee, and it shall be righteousness unto thee before the Lord thy God. I don't know if I need to go to Ezekiel, but let me go to Ezekiel 18:7. I want to make sure there's nothing in here that is not in the other verses. I don't remember. Ezekiel 18 and verse 7. He hath not oppressed any, but hath restored to the debtor his pledge, hath spoiled none by violence, hath given his bread to the hungry, and hath covered the naked with a garment. Again, the debtor his pledge, his collateral. And then, of course, Proverbs 20 and verse 16 says, take his garment, I believe, that is surety for a strange woman. Let me see if I'm right on that. Proverbs 20 and verse 16. Take his garment, that is surety for a stranger, not a strange woman, and take a pledge of him for a strange woman. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with collateral. The Bible teaches taking collateral for a debt. But you don't want to be in that position. You don't want to be the person that's putting up your clothing or your house or something, that, especially that you need for collateral. And you definitely don't want to do so for somebody else, being surety. You don't ever want to co-sign. We'll talk about that later on in this study. That is probably the dumbest thing you could ever do in your life. Because at least if you're taking on your own debt, you get to enjoy the thing you went into debt for. You know, you get to drive the nice car if you just went into debt for it. Or you get to live in the nice house if you went into debt for it. If you co-sign for somebody else, you don't even get to enjoy the car or the house, but you're on the hook for the debt. Dumbest thing in the world. You think, well, the guy can't get a loan. I feel bad for him. You know why he can't get a loan? Because he's not credit worthy. That's why. You know why you have to co-sign for somebody? Because the bank says, this guy's not going to pay his bill. Therefore, I want you to pay it. It's the dumbest thing in the world you could possibly do. So as I said before, never use your house as collateral. And this is what people do when they take out a home equity loan, otherwise called a HELOC or a second mortgage, or anything else that's essential to your survival. You don't want to do that. That's a really bad idea. Deuteronomy 24 and verse 6. Deuteronomy 24 and verse 6. No man shall take the nether or the upper millstone to pledge, for he taketh a man's life to pledge. See, if you were a farmer and you needed those millstones to grind out your grain, right, this is your livelihood, in Israel you weren't allowed to take that for a pledge. Right, so that tells me you would be really stupid to put up your house for a pledge or your house for collateral. Don't do that. All right, number 11 reason to avoid debt like the plague is that you will be at the mercy of unmerciful men who will take all that they can from you if you can't pay. Let's look at Job 24 and verse 3. I mean, these banks don't mess around. These collections agencies don't mess around. They're not going to be your, you know, like your nice parent is if you can't pay and they just say, well, you know, get it to me when you can. No, they're going to come after you. They're going to sue you. They're going to repossess your car. They're going to take your stuff. And they don't care. Proverbs 24 and Job 24 and verse 3. Talking about the wicked here. They drive away the ass of the fatherless. They take the widow's ox for a pledge. They don't care. They want their money. And if it means taking her ox, well, it doesn't matter. They're unmerciful. 12th reason to avoid debt like the plague is you are a burden on others. You're a burden on others. You could be a burden in two different ways. You could be a financial burden where you have to go to them to borrow money, right? That's an obvious burden. But you know what? If nothing else, and don't fool yourself, even if you don't know it, this is true. This is true even if you don't know it. Take my word for it. You will be a mental and an emotional burden on others who worry about your financial situation. If you are in debt, you will be a mental and an emotional burden on others, whether they tell you that or not. I've carried plenty of burden on my shoulders from people that I know that are in debt or that are in bad financial situations that is a big weight on me mentally and emotionally. And I'm sure every one of you know what I'm talking about. You've probably been there as well. That's not fair to others. It's not fair to put others through that. Not to mention harming yourself. Number 13th reason to avoid debt like the plague. You can't help others who are in need. How are you going to help others when you're in debt up to your eyeballs? You can't. So you can't even fulfill the biblical command to have mercy on the poor and help those that are in need. And the last reason to avoid debt like the plague is that if you're in debt, you are part of the problem. You're part of the problem. You're part of the reason why this country is in a mess. You're part of the reason why people are broke, people are hopeless, people are enslaved to the bankers. You're part of the problem. You're part of the problem that so many people are on government welfare because they are broke themselves, relying on the rest of the population to take care of them. And people don't have enough money left in their budget to help out the poor, and they end up on government doles, right? You're part of the problem. There's many, many ways that you're part of the problem. And there's other ways that I'll get into next Sunday. I'm not going to get any further than that, though. But Braden, I always like to zero in on you because you are young and you have the ability to do everything right. I want to make sure you can see me. You have the ability to do everything right, and you have no excuse. You've heard all this stuff. You're a little young. You'll need to listen to this again in a few years, but you have no excuse. You should be able to do everything right, make all the right decisions, never have any debt except maybe for that house, and you should be a millionaire by the time you are old. Easily, you should be a millionaire. There's no excuse for you to not be one because you know what to do. So I want you to purpose in your heart right now that you will never go into debt for anything except for that first house on a 15-year mortgage, by the way. You might not even understand what that means, but I'll explain it to you here in a few years if you've got questions on it. But purpose in your heart right now. You're so young. You're off to a good start. You're already working. You're already saving up money. You're off to a great start. Purpose in your heart. I will never borrow one penny for anything ever. Not a car, not a clothes, not a four-wheeler, not student loans, Not furniture in my house. I'll sleep on the floor before I do that. Nothing. You take out loans for nothing except for that first house. And you pay that thing off as fast as you can. And if you purpose to do that right now, you are going to be light years ahead of your generation. Light years ahead. I'll bet you everybody in this room wishes they would have heard this at your age and understood it and took it to heart. Because this would be the Millionaire's Club. This would be the Millionaire's Club. So that's all I have to say. I'll get to the rest of this next week, Lord willing, and I thank you for your kind and patient attention.